This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
7 minutes after 3 o'clock, WSMI standing by and ready to go. Ready to talk a little bit about, well, the subjects will be many and varied, I believe. Yeah, there you go. Move that. We've got Dennis Carlock in the studio today, also known, a.k.a. Rotten Rod, one of my friends for a long time. Montgomery County resident who spent 20 years in California because he learned that he could growl like a superstar when it came to heavy metal music, right, Rod?
I tried.
No kidding. Tell me a little bit. You grew up in Coffeen area?
I grew up in Coffeen, went to grade school in Coffeen, then after that went to Hillsboro High School, graduated the class of 74.
Now, what exactly happened that prompted you to decide that you were going to be the front guy of an AC/DC tribute band?
Well, that just happened about when I moved back from California in 2011, and some friends of mine, buddies, had a band called Somebody's Ex, and I would go sit in with those guys and hang out with them, and then I started throwing Halloween parties, and at this Halloween party, I wanted to have a band besides the other bands playing, so I talked these guys into learning some AC/DC songs, and we sat up and played the Halloween party, and after that, we decided to put something together and play some shows around locally.
All right, now, we're going to go back chronologically, and I'll be more fair, and we'll get to that as we go along, but let's talk a little bit about Army guy, then decided to sing a type of music that you felt you could do reasonably well.
Well, it got started when I went to see a local band around here play, and they were, back then it was called punk rock, and it didn't take a whole heck of a lot of talent, and I thought, well, you know what, anybody can do this, even me, so I dove into it, and that was like around 1979, 1980, and we started playing in my living room, me and a few other guys, and we put together a band called Agent Orange, and played around like the Moose Hall and the Butler Community Center and places like that, and that's what it started out as, and then after that fell through, we started another one called Raw 10, and that was the band I played in before I moved to California in 1982.
Now, I remember Raw 10 because I was still here working on the radio the first time. Remember Agent Orange. Remember you guys playing. When you went to California, how did making that split? Because that must have been a little bit scary, wasn't it?
Well, yes, it was. But I just had a strong desire. I had been working out at the glass factory in Hillsboro, Schramm City, for 4 years. And you know what? I planned it a year ahead of time. I took a year to get my ducks in a row, and I had an old Chevy van. It was painted black, and it had a big white skull and crossbones on the side of it that Frank Jorn painted. And I headed out to California. I had a friend from Hillsboro out there, Tony Bramel, and also Paul Kaderko. And I did the couch tour for about the first 30 days I was out there, but it all worked out. I had a good time.
Well, we're going to talk about Chapter 1 of the California Days when we come back in a few minutes. So we got a young guy from Coffeen who plans for a year to go to California, does the couch tour with his buddies for a while, and decides to hit the strip and get back into the music again, only this time in California instead of Central Illinois. So how did this all come out?
Well, you know, it's hard to describe it, but it was just a lot of luck and a lot of auditions. At that time, there was a paper out there called The Recycler, and it advertised anything and everything. It was kind of like the Shopper around here. And it had page after page after page of musicians looking for bands, and it had several pages of bands seeking musicians. I just started doing auditions and meeting people and traveling around and trying to get lay of the land. And after a bunch of auditions, I hooked up with a group of young guys, and we put together the first band I was in out there. It was called Nightmare. And that band lasted for about a year, and we were playing just the local club circuits in Orange County and Los Angeles and Hollywood, and playing the same places that Rat and Motley Crue and Great White, Dawkins, Metallica, Slayer, all these guys, Poison. We were playing not necessarily the same nights, but they'd be there one night and we'd be there the next night. And we did that for about a year. And one thing's happened after another, and that band fell apart. And after that, for like the next 5 or 6 years, I put together another band called Nightmare 2, and had several different people come through the doors in that band, because it was out there. If it didn't happen immediately, you just wanted to jump ship and try something else. There was just so much going on and so many people to play with that everybody was anxious, and it was hard to get the people that wanted to stay in and slug it out and wait, you know. But I was guilty of that as well. But I had a good time. We played all over and put out several records. As a matter of fact, the last time I was in here, we was spinning one of my records on Night Rock, and that was like 1985.
A long time.
Brad was the jock back then, and you know, WSMI used to give me airtime. They used to play my stuff, and one time I was home, and Brian gave me a big handful of WSMI stickers, and I went out there and plastered them all over Hollywood Boulevard. They were on stop signs and storefronts and everywhere.
That's amazing. Now, let me ask you. So you had Nightmare and you had Nightmare 2. You were playing with a bunch of other people. Then, all of a sudden, and this is when by the time that I met you, this is when Rotten Rod and the Warheads were strong. And
yeah.
I remember two things that you gave me, and this was right about the time we started doing karaoke out at the Passport. You had been home for a visit. You weren't home to stay. And you brought me a T-shirt of Rotten Rod and the Warheads, and you gave me a video cassette, a VHS cassette of, I think it had two or three of your videos.
Sure.
And I mean, those were some amazing videos.
You can see them
videos
on YouTube. They're, you can pull them up
still
on YouTube.
There. I watched one the other day. The one. Well, you know, it was the one with the gas mask and all that stuff.
Well, there's about a half a dozen. Plus, there's several live videos of the Whiskey A Go-Go and stuff. But if you Google Rotten Rod or pull it up on YouTube, there's a bunch of different videos you can watch.
My goodness.
They were played on a bunch of small cable television stations all over Southern California. I've been on like about a dozen different TV shows.
Well, one thing you've been, as long as I've known you, is a pretty strong promoter. And I think that is terrific. So you come back home. You meet up with some of your buddies and some guys maybe you meet for the first time, and you put together your tribute band, and now it's called Riff Raff. You're playing out quite a bit. As a matter of fact, you're playing this weekend, right?
No, next weekend.
Next weekend.
We're playing at Cabetto's in Taylor Springs Saturday night.
A week from Saturday night.
February 5th, or March 5th, I believe.
March 5th, okay. That sounds terrific. I look forward to that.
Well, you've been to several of my shows.
Oh, yes, I have. I've been and I've seen you play, and I must say, you guys do an outstanding job. And the Halloween parties are epic and
Rotten
legendary.
Ween.
Rotten Ween, absolutely. In a few minutes, I want to play a country song. Actually, I want to do it now. I want to play Glen Campbell.
Right.
I want you to talk about Glen Campbell for just a second.
I was lucky enough to see Glen Campbell out at the Orange County Fairgrounds in California. And we were just talking, me and him bantering back and forth about Glen Campbell and about some of the stuff that he did before. He was in Tequila, the Champs, the band that did Tequila. And also we found out he was in the Hondells, Little Honda or whatever.
Right.
But you was telling me you seen him play...
with the Beach Boys.
Yeah, he also played with the Beach Boys. But you told me that you saw him play at the Illinois State Fair with the Beach Boys. And
The Who was there opening for him.
And how was The Who as an opening act?
It was their first U.S. tour, and it was the most amazing thing because here they're out there playing, and as they're winding up their set... after their encore, and they're jumping on top of these huge, big Marshall stacks and pounding their guitars on top of them and breaking everything up. And it was the most incredible thing I'd ever seen thus far at like 17 years old.
Well, those guys, you know, when they first started out, The Who, they'd be broke, destroying their equipment, and they'd be broken in debt and go get more equipment and do the same thing to it. But after they made themselves legends, people like Guitar Center and these other places would give them guitars, and they would destroy them on stage and give them back, and then Guitar Center would hang them up on the wall.
Oh, that's amazing.
And it would draw people into their store.
That's awesome. Well, I'll tell you, I must say The Who was a fascinating experience, but so's Riff Raff. At least you guys don't break your stuff up.
We can't afford it.
Zac Brown Band and Beautiful Drug, 3:30 on FM 106. And John Michael Marty here on this Thursday afternoon. Thank goodness the snow has melted off the roads, even though it's pretty slushy in the yards and on the sides. Our guest today, Dennis Carlock, also known as Rotten Rod, frontman for Riff Raff, a terrific AC/DC tribute band, but also a guy with some country roots from Coffeen, Illinois. We wanted to talk a little bit about, you were mentioning Nightmare and Nightmare 2. You had some guys from Nightmare 2 who, again, wouldn't stick around long enough, but had turned out to be pretty successful, didn't they?
A couple good friends of mine, Joey Allen and Eric Turner, I introduced those guys, and they played with me briefly, and the first recordings that Joey Allen ever made were on one of my records. But anyway, they went on and went up to Hollywood and joined a band called Warrant that later on became multi-platinum and are still touring today. I just saw them in St. Louis a couple weeks ago.
I'll be darned. The clubs in California, they obviously weren't fancy. They were buildings. They had room for a stage and people standing around, and they served beer for the most part, right?
Yep.
You know, kind of like what the American Lounge was in Nokomis, so back
right.
those years
ago. Or the
ago.
Coliseum over in Bunnell.
Certainly. Yeah. The Coliseum thing a few weeks ago was quite a splash. Wouldn't it have been great to have been there at every one of those fabulous shows they did over the years?
There's a nice clip that they put together, a small documentary, and it's on my Facebook page, and you can pull it up on YouTube, but it's about like a 10-minute documentary listing a lot of the acts that played through there, and a lot of them, I never knew that Jimi Hendrix played there before.
No, or the fact that she turned down the Beatles.
Yep.
That's crazy. But you know what? Now that's a conversation for another day. But it is, like you say, it's up there, and the Coliseum documentary is fascinating to watch. I wanted to talk to you for a minute, if I could, Rod, about some of the things. I know that you and I have talked a lot. You really have a real kinship with a lot of this old music, even going back to Lee Mace, Ozark, Opry, and some of the things like Little Jimmy Dickens. You were big fans of that music,
well,
too.
Well, you couldn't help but growing up in that era back, you know, Porter Wagoner and Dolly Parton and Hee Haw, and you just was exposed to it, especially if you were ever babysitted with your grandparents, you know, that and throwing a little Lawrence Welk you, and wrestling at the Chase. You had a mix array of a bunch of things, but Hee Haw was one of my favorites, and I was lucky enough to visit Buck Owens' Crystal Palace in Bakersfield a few times, and I was lucky enough to catch one of his acts before he passed away. And funny, he had his same backup band, and they had big video screens behind playing original Hee Haw segments, and it would show, you know, you'd see the bass player up there playing in his 60s, and then it'd go back and show him when he's on in his 20s, and it was really great. And that place, if you're ever in Bakersfield, California, it's Buck Owens' little version of his own Hard Rock Cafe. It's really something else. Got the Cadillac behind the bar with the horns on it, and pistols for the door handles, and Winchester on the trunk.
I know that Roy Clark used to always call Bakersfield Nashville West, and Buck would always laugh and say, no, he'd say Nashville is Bakersfield East.
Well, Dwight Yoakam, you know, that Bakersfield sound.
It certainly was all of that. Let me ask you, in addition to playing the music, you were quite a motocross rider, too.
Well, I did that before I left here, but and about 10 years before I decided to move back, I got back into it out there because they race year-round, and I started riding vintage motocross, which is basically old guys on old bikes.
Old guys on old bikes, okay.
And there's tracks everywhere. There's Glen Helen, and there's just Carlsbad. You could race every weekend if you wanted to.
What about when you were playing, when you went back out there a few weeks ago, and you went out to the Whiskey, and the Whiskey A Go-Go, which probably is the most famous, the most well-known, the Doors played there. Like you say, everybody played there.
I think the Doors was a house band.
The Doors were the house band for a period of time, that's correct. What about just going back there and playing with some of your old buddies again, or even with people you hadn't seen in a long time?
It was a good time. I went out for the NAMM show, and while I was there, That's the National Association of Music Manufacturers, and everything dealing with music, whether it's a drum kit or a piano or a mic stand or a guitar case, they're all out there trying to peddle their wares. And I got to run into several people. I seen Stevie Wonder was there, and seen some of the guys from Whitesnake, and also Carmen Appice. I ran into several big people there, and was able to chat with them briefly. But some friends of mine were playing the night before the NAMM show. There was a show at the Grove, and there's a local St. Louis boy that's up and coming. He's a guitar player named Sam Bam Colton. And he's been out in California for the past couple years going to GIT. He's in a band called Gabby Ray, and they opened up for a band called Europe at the Grove. And then they were on tour, and they left with him on tour. And he's an upcoming. He's going to be this generation of Slash from Guns N' Roses. But, and then some other friends of mine were in a heavy metal band called Ruthless, and I got to see them play. And a couple of those guys used to play with me in my bands, and they're in Europe right now getting ready to play a great big outdoor festival in Greece right now as we speak.
As you come back and jump back in with the band, with your Riff Raff band, you also happen to make connection with another AC/DC tribute band in St. Louis. Is that correct?
I took Riff Raff. There's a local bar in St. Louis by the airport called Charlax, and every Thursday night they have an open mic night. And that's where all the heavyweights from St. Louis go and just set in and play. And I had gone there a few times. A friend of mine from here told me about that place and took me to it. And I started going there every once in a while and setting in. And I took Riff Raff there to set in and play. And somebody out in the audience seen that, and they said, you know what, I have some friends that have a AC/DC tribute band here in St. Louis looking for a vocalist. And they gave me their number, and we swapped numbers, and I auditioned for them and ended up getting the gig. I do the Bon Scott part, and they have another fellow do the Brian Johnson part. But played several, and now I'm playing the St. Louis circuit, and we had played the St. Louis Library in October, and before that we played out at Chesterfield at the amphitheater in front of 1,000 people. And I have a show coming up with them in May at Pops.
Okay, well, that sounds like fun too. Obviously, doing that particular style of music can play havoc with your voice if you don't prepare. What anything special you have to deal with? And I know people think, what are you talking about? Are you screaming? No, there's a method to what you do.
It's control, but in order to prep and get ready for that, you got to gargle with sand.
Yeah, I know. I understand. So back to Night Rock a little bit. So when they used to play play your Nightmare records on Night Rock, I understand right now, and I've happened to look a couple of times, there's fabulous batwing-shaped records from Nightmare on eBay. There's all kinds of you've left your mark. People know they'll know you've been here.
They've turned into collector's items, and they're actually fetching some pretty good money on eBay. So if you got any that I sold you years ago, or you picked up at the record store up in Hillsboro, they're actually worth some bucks.
That's pretty terrific. Back to some of the videos. You know, the whole concept of shooting videos for punk rock bands or for metal bands was a little different than shooting some of the videos for some other venues or some other types of music. You guys had some really gruesome subject matter.
Well, we ran into a guy that worked at a TV studio in Marina Del Rey. And he had his own TV show, and he actually had access to all the equipment there. And he said, do you have any ideas? And I said, well, I have tons of ideas. And he said, well, all we need to do is put you in front of this green wall, and we'll shoot you guys. You know, you'll be lip syncing. We'll shoot you on the green wall, and we could put whatever you want behind it. And I said, well, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's
cool. And the common thread was ending with a mushroom cloud in most of them.
Well,
I
threw in a bunch of there's a little bit of Twilight Zone. There's a little bit of Dick the Bruiser, and there's all kinds of stuff in those videos.
I will tell you, folks, go to YouTube and search for. What's the best?
Rotten Rod and the Warheads, or just Google Rotten Rod and a bunch of. God only knows what pops up.
The videos are fabulous to watch. They are lots of fun. And actually, I think some of the music's pretty darn good, and I love country music. I love pop, and I like most of the stuff you play too. But I like a lot of music. So
we I had a band called Crooner, and it was like a punk band, and I was the crooner. And at one point, we did a rap version of Johnny Cash's "Boy Named Sue," and it went over really good. And we thought, you know what, we're going to start our own version, our own blend of music here, and we're going to mix rap and country, and we're going to call it Crap.
That would have worked, I'm sure. It would have worked, no doubt about it. I never saw that one coming. Sorry. 20 before 4, back with more with Rotten Rod here shortly. Rod, when you were a kid and you were first getting introduced to the radio being turned on, like in, as I was, who were the country artists that you heard first and who influenced you?
The first song that I can remember ever hearing, I was a passenger on my grandpa's school bus. My grandpa drove a school bus, I was probably pre-kindergarten. And the very first song I remember ever hearing was Peter, Paul, and Mary, Puff the Magic Dragon.
That was your first? Okay.
And but the very first country song that I believe I can remember is Big Bad John by Jimmy Dean.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was the time when country songs would be, were pop songs as well. They would cross over, and we didn't have near the compartmentalization that we have now. That was great.
I think the second song I can remember is The Tokens, "When the Lion Sleeps Tonight."
Yeah, that's true.
But I used to listen to a lot of, I got introduced to Johnny Cash when I was in grade school, and I went out and bought San Quentin and Folsom Prison, and that's when "Boy Named Sue" was a big hit, and enjoyed that. But I remember watching Porter Wagoner and Little Jimmy Dickens and Conway Twitty.
Used to see Porter Wagoner and Dolly on the Porter Wagoner show. And
sure.
Used to have Porter Wagoner and the Wagon Masters, wasn't it, or the something like that? That'd be on like Saturday afternoon on one of the independent stations. And Dolly would be singing with him, and I mean, her hair was piled so high. Dolly'd be almost 7 foot tall. She'd be
beehive.
As tall as tall as Porter.
Hee haw! I watched a lot of Hee haw.
Yep, and one of the Hee haw folks. Was just, I'm trying to think. I thought somebody was around locally. There's not many of them left, you know, of the crew. Was somebody, one of the girls, I thought, I'm not sure, was around locally.
You know, and also, if you watched the Beverly Hillbillies, you'd see Flat and Scruggs on the Beverly Hillbillies. And,
and
Roy Clark was on the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah, Ralph Stanley's birthday today.
Yeah.
You remember the... Those guys that play that bluegrass, oh, my goodness, that was amazing. And, by the way, it is George Harrison's birthday today.
Sure is. Yeah.
And Ralph Stanley today is born 1927, and, of course, George Harrison. He thought it was birthday was yesterday, but it actually was today. For the longest time, he said he thought it was the 24th.
Well, you know, the Beatles, okay, Ringo did Buck Owens, or actually Ringo's what was his big hit?
Act Naturally.
Yes, and now did Buck Owens write that or did he cover it?
Buck Owens wrote it.
Okay, and then Ringo covered it.
Yeah.
And then later on they did a duo with it.
That's right. That was amazing. Now you talk about moving on a little bit, and we talked about Dwight Yoakam. You say you saw Dwight Yoakam also out at the Orange County Fair?
No, but I did see Johnny Cash at the Orange County Fair, and I also got to see Ricky Nilsson play there, but Dwight Yoakam was slugging it out in the clubs in Los Angeles and Orange County before he ever got his first record deal, and some of them clubs were pretty hard punk bands were playing, and believe it or not, they did not interfere with his performance or heckle him or anything, because he got up there with a cowboy hat and ripped up jeans and sang like a cowboy. You know, he had that Bakersfield sound, and that's what he was all about, and they respected him and didn't harass him, and that says a lot right there.
Dwight Yoakam certainly, and again, became an actor as well and still performing, looking pretty good, although his getting a little thin on top, but he lets it grow on his side.
He's pretty good friends with Billy Bob.
Yes, he is that. This is one of his – big hits. Not again, it was one that he covered. This hour has gone by literally way too fast. At least it has for me. Hopefully it has for you too, Rod.
I've had a good time.
It's about 3 minutes before 4 o'clock, and right up until the 4 o'clock news, we're going to visit a little bit more with Rotten Rod, known also as Dennis Carlock, the old young man from Coffeine, who fronts up a pretty good AC/DC tribute band called Riff Raff. Now, we want to talk a little bit. You also kind of been dabbling in radio a little bit, so tell me about your show tomorrow night.
Well, we do a show down in Carlisle on WDLJ every few months, me and Randy Alberman, and Randy works at the First National Bank in Greenville as a vice president, and myself and the station manager, Lloyd, Moose Lloyd, but we put together a show called Rock Zone Legends, and we interview different people, different what we consider legends and stuff, and we have one of the guys from Iron Butterfly that's going to be on the air this Friday night, and the bass player for a band called Lit out of Southern California, and we're going to talk to Sam Bam Colton, that guitar player I was telling you about earlier on our show. So we do it every few months, and it's a good show. So if you get a chance, if you're down that neck of the woods, it's hard. You can't pull it here. We're out of the they don't have enough watts to reach us here, but if you're down in that neck of the woods, pull it up. You'll enjoy it.
What's the frequency if you want to take a little drive south?
That would be 97.5 FM.
Okay. Well, that sounds like fun. It sounds like a good show. Now, you guys record them, though, and hopefully we'll get it up.
Some of them can be on the internet, the interviews. We have several different interviews on there. We had some of the guys from Alice Cooper and some of the guys from Black Oak, Arkansas that we got posted, and it's a good show, and if you get a chance, come down to Cabetto's next Saturday night and catch Riff Raff. And also, my other band, the St. Louis band, AZDZ, will be at Pops in May.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit, just in a minute or so we have left. Tell me what it's like putting a tribute band together for AC/DC. I mean, you've got a catalog of music. You've got certainly a fair amount of enthusiasm that rolls across that stage. But is it musically your guys? Who all is the members of your band?
Well, I got Sean Gifford on guitar, his brother Jeremy Gifford on drums, and Johnny Meyer on bass guitar. And we do the old stuff, the Bon Scott stuff. Their new singer, Brian Johnson's got a different style, different tone, and it just tears my throat up. So we do a couple tunes from him, but for the most part, we just do the Bon Scott stuff. And the St. Louis band takes it a step further, and their guitar player tries to dress up like Angus Young and look like him and do more antics, more Angus antics. But the Riff Raff band is more like just a cover band. We're going to start dabbling and doing some other artists as well.